copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
When we look at Europe, we have, and I come from the evangelical side of the, so I know my numbers only really well on the evangelical side. We have 20 million evangelicals in Europe today. When you look at, 740 million Europeans we have. We have about 500 million who live in the EU, in the Eurozone, or in the European Union, more that. Which makes it very interesting. We just, you see the different tensions already related to the EU, who's going to be part of it or not, and I won't go now into, is anyone, yes, you from the UK here, so you've got your own trouble in your nations now. And looking at that country, we have such a rich history. I mean, when I look at, what Europe has been giving to the world, and now how it is changing that we are, on the receiving end, in that we have 24 countries within Europe who have less than 1% evangelicals. 24 countries. We've got two of our countries are in the world leading high suicide rate. That's Ireland and that's Slovenia. But you have to look and on the European context and the world context. So I'm talking about the world index. Then on the European scale, then the ratio can be different again. It's really fascinating. So we deal with a young generation who is feeling utterly lost. They react with that. And even looking at Greece, for example, Greece had an influx, a rise of 30% of committed suicide among the 40 and younger men in society due to the rise, of the financial crisis and so on. So Europe is in a mess. And what is that we do about that? And when I do my master's on Europe at Radcliffe College, and so I actually owe lots of these slides to my professor, to Memory, and to Jeff Fountain, and to others. So if you don't like some of the content, I tell them. But just one of the last sessions, lectures I did last week, actually was on secularization, and the way we actually define that. And actually I found it very interesting that I'm going to give you three things, the societal secularization, the organizational, and the individual secularization. And it's very fascinating, actually, if you have time, to look into your own context and see which of these is prioritized in your country. Because though we always, use the big, huge word, secularization, actually, faith and religion still plays various parts in there, but, some of it's just more on the government side of things who pushes very hard against something. Sometimes it is even the church, and so it varies very much, and I thought it was very helpful to just know the three different kinds. Maybe you know that already, but, just to think, that even when I think of the UK, you still have someone like the Queen, as the authority, or sometimes even then the church and the parliament, being involved. So, I mean, there are different things even for us in Germany and other countries. So we face that that crisis today in Europe. And there are a few ones I just want to touch quickly with you because it has such an impact on mobilizing our generation for God and for missions. The first one I wanted to look at is the economic crisis in Europe. I know it was very bad in 2008, 2009. Some have recovered, but we know that the tensions are brewing. There's quite some unrest. There are various regions now across Europe where people are expecting a war. So if you follow the news, over 2, 3, 4 years, there's something brooding there. Something's going to happen. And so we see that happening all across Europe. And we have, when we look at the European government debt, and I have to say, some of the stuff you think is very old, but when you do like the European Value Study and others, they're published in 2012, but then the data is from 2008. It takes them more than 4 years to actually analyze stuff and so on. So you look at, the countries who are facing such high debt, and then, of course, the consequence is played out in the unemployment rate among our generation. When we look at Spain, including the students, 75% of everyone below 25 years of age is unemployed. What does it do to our churches? What does it do to create them, to recruit them for missions? It's hardly, very unlikely that, they find sponsorship and someone to engage with them and say, I've got this call to go to Africa. They think, goodness me, we're just on the survival mode here. which makes it very hard sometimes then. And that's also why we are so strong about a mission lifestyle now across Europe, saying we need to engage with them. We need to create this entrepreneurial spirit again. We need to teach the young generation that also you can just, you know, with your giftings, you can actually create your own business or, you know, offer your services and so on. And then the other thing we face is the political crisis. A huge pressure on the European Union. And I hope you know how the EU got started, you know, in 1956 with that coal steel agreement between France and Germany. It was for the sake of for the goodness of Europe. And there was Robert Schuman, a very devout Catholic, and saying, no longer, never again shall we have another war on our continent. And they met for 3 days with Adenauer and others, you know, in a monastery, praying and saying, God, I mean, you need to do something here on our continent. So we face that, and so we have massive pressure within the EU. And even, you know, I come from Germany. It was unheard of to have, demonstrations are fine, but, you know, such aggression on our streets. Even I am from Hamburg. We had lots of riots now, dealing with migrant issues and so on in Hamburg. So for the first time, I felt unsafe in my own city, and there were areas where you would never go in after 9 o'clock, which is now, of course, we know that from London, we know that from Paris and other regions, from Turkey, and so there's something there among this young generation who are desperate to express, and they're so frustrated, so it's just taken out. And then we have a huge pressure also from the external parties, and it's actually very fascinating as well as absolutely disturbing that we have so many Christians now even in being involved in extremist parties. I just think of, probably heard that on the news, you know, in the beginning of this year, you know, all these Germans marching, that Pegida movement against migrants and so on, which is rising everywhere. But here, I was right there with the board of the Evangelical Alliance in Germany. They were horrified by seeing on television some of the main leaders of Germany marching right in there. So what is one of the issues we deal with? And there's a politician in the UK, an atheist, and he said 2 years ago, and it absolutely stuck with me, he said the Christians might be the only glue keeping Europe together. I thought, what a profound statement, you know, from someone who doesn't even believe in God, you know, saying the Christians are the only ones. And I so wonder, what is it that we do in our churches when we talk about missions and so on? How much do we help our young generation to be peacemakers in society? How much do we teach them to bring reconciliation? You know, what is out there that we say, God, can you do it again? And a leading missiologist on Europe is Grace Davey. I mean, have you met her? And Grace Davey, you said in her book on Europe and looking at the different trends, she found out, which I thought was very interesting, and you know that maybe, but she said the church is the only place across the world, but also in Europe, which provides a place for mourning. It's the only faith as such who provides a place for mourning. Because when this awful thing happened in Norway, the massacre on the island, where did the people go to? The church. We just had the warm German wings crash, with the Germans involved and so on. Where did people go to? It was the church. But then it's the one-time-only thing. You go, you mourn, and then you just leave it again. But what an opportunity for us to use that. And then the thing we face also across Europe is the pressure from the various regions. You know, as you see in Flanders, the Basque, Corsica, Lombardy, and some regions of the Hungary from the Hungarian Empire, you know, also into Romania, there's heaps of tension in there. So we were watching very carefully what is going to happen to Scotland or in the UK as such, you know, because that will be impacting a lot of our countries. You know, our Catalans were trying to, we see that rise everywhere across Europe, you know. But I mean, there are some regions, so I think I have them on my prayer list. I say, God, something is happening there. You know, when you see the young ones up on the street and you see the churches being involved, you know, something is, you know, hovering over that. So I wonder what's happening there. Then we have the social crisis we face across Europe. You know, you see that, I mean, with the identity crisis, your migration from outside the European Union is twice that much from inside. Of course, we know lots of Polish went to the UK and other places, you know, Turks to Germany and so on. And then, of course, the demographic crisis. Like, for example, that's the Eurostat, who said, you know, by 2060, 33% of Germans will be over 65. And the average Italian will be over 50. So we say until the age, the decade of 2050, we say we're going to lose 65 million of young people. And we're going to have a rise of 60 million older, above 50. So if you think, you know, of looking at a fruitful, successful youth ministry today, you also need to keep these numbers in mind. You know, having a church, you know, and maybe having a youth group of 200 is massive. You know, some countries it still occurs, you know. But looking at these numbers, we are 1.2 million of youth and children in Europe under the Evangelical Alliance, you know. So it's trying to deal with that and, you know, saying, can we duplicate that? Can we see that grow? And then the environmental crisis, of course, we have in Europe, and we know the floods which has happened now in Serbia and last year. We know UK has been hit several times, you know, around Christmas and other nations across our continent, which we didn't have for a very long time. So we, as you think, you know, the young ones are especially keen on seeing a change there. You know, social injustice and environmental issues are one of the biggest topics for them to consider. So if your mission is somehow not engaged or as your church, you know, about fair trade issues, especially in the western part of Europe, and, you know, dealing with where have you got the clothes from which you wear and so on, they're absolutely high on that. And, of course, the most important for us is of course, the religious crisis. And you see Grace Davey in there as well, you know, the theories which we have across our continent, trying to address it from the theological point of view, what is happening across our continent with the rise of Islam and with the decline of institutional Christianity and so forth. And it says, you know, only three countries, France, Germany, and the Czech Republic, is faith below 40% among young people. And actually, with, you know, Jim Membry and with the, where's the magazine he works for? Remember that one? Oh, Vision something? In the UK, they have a magazine on Europe. And they just did a statistic over 2 years, and they actually realized that there's a slight rise now, again, among younger people across Europe being interested in God. They don't know what kind of God, but it's been growing, that interest, the spirituality of young ones. Comes in for the young ones, they look for simplicity. Simplistic lifestyle, you know, all of that. Monastic communities among young people across Europe are rising up a lot, especially also, you know, started through the 24/7 prayer movement, you know, on prayer mission justice, big topics, that exactly feeds into that. So we see there's a decline, but maybe there seems to be, some are now saying, prognosing, maybe we've come already to the bottom, a stagnation. Maybe we see some lifting up, which would, of course, be fantastic, but it won't just happen. It is us together and endeavoring for that. You know, the big campaigns which are happening across Europe, you know, atheists very much are lobbying for their cause. Lots and lots of millions are pumped into that in various countries. That's just, of course, an old UK example. And even when you look at, you know, the crucifix, you know, the ban of crucifix and so on, this is, of course, I mean, very hard to find up-to-date data, but it's happening all across our countries that things are banned. You know, religious symbols are banned. Religion is pushed to the margin, no matter what religion. And it's very fascinating. We just had this big case in Geneva. I don't know if you've heard about that, but, you know, the EU in Brussels and others, they tried to forbid to have any religious activities on the streets, which would very much impact the way that we, some of us, you know, open air campaigners and so on, do missions on the streets. So they actually tried to ban all religious activities and in Geneva. That's about 3 weeks ago. And the European Evangelical Alliance, the Swiss Evangelical Alliance, did a big study on that, a big research, and they actually won the case that it was able to be reversed. But in Brussels, that was already about 7 years ago that this ban is out. So sometimes we have our African brothers and sisters, you know, on the streets of Brussels evangelizing and saying, you know, for God, we've been imprisoned, you know. But so there is a fine now, even in Belgium, that you pay when you get found out on the streets of sharing the gospel with someone. And then we see the restrictions in our society with the index, you know, of what's happening to your nation, if you're more on the secular side or, you know, more on the restricted side. And so it will be fascinating to see that index in about 5 years because there are quite some changes ahead. Philip Jenkins is a, you know, a great historian, writer on various issues. And he wrote the book Europe, God's Continent. It's also, I started my Facebook group on Europe with different European professors, and so everyone, you know, posting their statistics, if you're interested, just join that group. others feed into that. But he did this book, and I thought it's such a powerful title, you know, for us saying it's God's continent. And what I thought was very interesting, one of the things I took out of his book, he says, you know, the indicator, whatever he says, that when Christianity is at its lowest in its point, this is where the real stuff happens, because then we get together and we say, I mean, we don't want to see Christianity finish in Europe. This gets us on our knees, and maybe then the despair and frustration makes us actually look for other methods and revising, maybe in some regards, our theology, the way we do church and so on. So it says, you know, in the sense that their faith is about to perish in their homelands, and that they urgently need to make up these losses farther afield, whether overseas or whatever. You know, how much can this get our knees and get us on our knees? And you know, John Knox, the revivalist, you know, of Scotland, and he prayed, God, give me Scotland or I die. And I wonder, you know, how passionate are we to see a change on our conscience, say, God, if you want to do that again, and he wants to, how much are we willing to pay the price to see that? So I'm preaching now, sorry. But that's where my passion is, you know. And so looking at religion as such across Europe and the churches, the way they you know, deal with it, there are five ways how religion is treated across our continent. I will not be able to always tell, you know, which country goes into which category. You from your own context, you know that much, much better than I do. Well, one is, you know, where culture or religion is just treated as a culture. You know, it's a belief, the values and tradition and memory, which we find in some. Then, you know, the next one is religion as identity. We know that more the further east maybe we go, or I refer to Turkey now, you know, where it is so much into their identity. Then the other thing is, you know, it's a relationship. It helps you to provide social relationships, and that's your kind of family. Or as a practice, it's just become a ritual, or as a power. And so I think we need to be very well aware of what's happening in our context, in our countries. What is, you know, religion faced, and also how does the church face, in general, the situation we're in? And of course, the most horrible one, of course, is that the church is in a crisis. And often we say we only have two ways we face it. It's nostalgia and saying, God, you were awesome in the past. Or we are so afraid and saying, you know, we go between these two things. There are not many of us who would say, you know, we're so hopeful for Europe. And Jeff Fountain is always the one who everything he has, everything he writes on is hope for Europe. And I think, you know, if we are not hopeful for Europe, this is exactly the message we pass on to our young generation. Because they feel that we are not hopeful for them, because we don't have any hope for Europe. So I think we really seriously need to consider the way we teach them, the way we engage with them, and saying, you know, it's us believing in you. And when I started off and I said I was scared to teach you today, I also said that because that so much reflects the generation under me. They're so scared. The number one question I get at the European Youth Mission Congresses I do is, can God use me? That's the number one question. It's about identity, security, all this stuff. And if you're not there to provide them that kind of, you know, you have a dream and I'm going to help you to get your dream into reality, you know, nothing is going to change. That's the highest insecurity we deal with in missions. I'm talking now about missions, yeah? They come, they're hungry to serve, they want to explore their gifts, and here they are stuck. There's an interesting paradigm happening at the moment with the millennials, you know, the ones born before the millennium. There is an intake or an uptake of cathedrals or of religious buildings across Europe. I'm not so sure about the East, I have to say, but about the West, we just got statistics from the UK, from Germany, you know, that young people, you know, Tese is a big thing, you know, liturgy and so on. A big uptake, about 20% over the last 5 years, they said, in the UK, it has grown by young people just flocking into cathedrals. So now cathedrals have started to open their doors 24 hours or 7 days a week, you know, because it provides a place where you can just go, light a candle, you know, pray. They don't have no idea who they pray to, but they need these sanctuaries. Because I say, this sanctuary provides me stability because I know it has been here for the last 1,000 years. So just there was a survey, which you can also, you know, the way the young generation now, especially in the Western part, you know, is looking again for sanctuaries and classic kind of churches, so that some is maybe upsetting to us who come maybe from more from the charismatic or Pentecostal background, where we try to have everything fancy. Just what you said, it's going back to the simple lifestyle. So, five things that we are in a transition here in our Christianity across our continent. And one is that we have gone from the center to the margins. And you feel that more or less in all of our various countries where we are pushed. And then, of course, that's one thing. We're from majority to minority. And some still think we are in the majority, and they just have forgotten to look at the number and the figures of our own countries. And then, you know, we have come from settlers to sojourners. We have become from people who were at home in our culture to be ones who are not traveling. So actually Christianity, you know, is at risk because we don't know any longer our identity. It's very much also related to Europe has lost its identity. In the past, it was a lot about, you know, exploiting others to being superior. So even the European Union has started a massive project with young ones and saying, what is our identity? Thank goodness, you know, where's the church, you know, redefining our identity as Christians? I don't want to have the EU determine, you know, what is our identity as such, you know, as Europeans or whatsoever. And then, of course, from privilege, we have come to plurality, which we just so much get into our churches. From control to witness, so no longer are we the charge, which sometimes is very hard for us. We have developed a much more humble attitude now across our society and saying we're here to serve, especially now when institutions lose their power, they lose their workers, church again has to address that. And the young ones so strongly react to these because they live in this. They don't have this heritage of thinking we've ever been in control. They never were, you know. And then from maintenance to mission, saying we need to do something again. We cannot just maintain the Christians we've had, but we need to go into mission. And I think we are slowly getting into that mode again, saying, God, we don't want to go down more in numbers. And then from institution to movement, of course, that would be our massive dream, to think about, movement, seeing what could it be like if, you know, younger and older get together. And one of the things I've just done for MissionNet is I realized that we have this gap, and we just talked about the intergeneration thing. I thought, you know, if I, you know, lead a youth European movement across Europe, I need the older generation. I always talk about spiritual fathers and mothers, which we so strongly lack. So we just created our flyer. We look for the 55 plus. And you see this spark now in the older generation. Like, oh, wow, you know, I can be part of something here, engaging with the youth. So what is our response to the thing we face here across Europe? And I'm going to get to work. I've quoted Rolf Kuhn. I've been with him at the Eurochurch gathering, and I don't know if that was your creation or whatever, I so loved it. God, who is able to raise Jesus from the dead, is capable to breathe new life into the dead bones of Europe. Do you believe that? Yeah. It's believing and acting on that. Some of that's which is the hardest. But we want to see that. We want to see that happen. And I've become a fanatic about bridges. I don't know why, but bridges and rainbows speak to me. So this is where what got actually at the Eurochurch thing, that they found out that there are 1,500 bridges across Germany who were just built and never were integrated into the system. Yeah, so there are no streets. I mean, and so I Googled that, and I get Google pictures. You see all these beautiful bridges, you know, and you think, wow, what a nuisance, you know. We have created this, we've invested so much money into this, but they're not linked to society. You know, no one can access these. I mean, how horrible. The other one I got is from Honduras. And in the 1970s, they had this massive typhoon hitting Honduras very badly. It was so strong that the river was rearranged. Yeah? So the bridge stays behind, and the river has just completely taken another road. And I just think, how much is that portraying our church today across Europe, you know? That we build great churches, we think they're great churches, and they're so out of context, out of, you know, engaging with the young ones. You know, we do not interact with them, say, what is it that you need? How can we help you? That's also why I started with you guys, you know, talking about the needs, because these needs will get us onto our knees. They will make us thrive, and they will give us the needed passion to see a change. So there, you know, Jeff found that there are different ways of looking at Europe today. And he came up with this, looking in these seven directions. I can't go so much into that, but if you Google that, you find more in that. But to develop that hope for Europe, to say, God, can you breathe new life into that again? We need to see that happen. And why he is so hopeful and others too is seven signs. They're God shakings we find across our continent. Various things spring up. Fresh expressions of church, of course, you find here. Prayer initiatives. Burn is one of the new things across Europe where you pray for 24 hours and worship God. European believers. I mean, just yesterday, I mean, through Facebook, Julia's here from Belarus was just saying, and Belarus is such a, I mean, tough situation, such a minority of Christians. And she was just saying, within the last week, 100 young ones became Christians in Belarus. I mean, this is like nearly doubling whatever is out there, you know, through students' camps and engaging. So God is on the move there across Europe. But how do we then motivate them onto getting the young ones engaged in missions? And so I would just like you to turn around again. I would like you to find another person or maybe two others so that you recreate new groups and say, you know, what have we discovered in our ministries, how we engage with them successfully? Okay, I will just continue here. But if you have some great stories that I'm also later, you know, happy to hear, or even some of you realize that when you share, that some of you actually do similar things. So even using the ELF, I brought so many people together. That's the gifting of a network, and, you know, in exchanging ideas and sharing together. Looking at the European Youth Mission Congress, you know, I lead that kind of movement. I do my analysis now on looking at, can a Congress actually cause a behavioral change? That's a very tough question. And I talked to Urbana, you know, and Zimmer and Mission Korea, all these national or international youth mission congresses worldwide. We just founded a network to say we need to engage with each other. And one of the things we realized in our mission we evaluated people who have come to the conference before and after, 2 months after, looking at impact, what are the tools in between, the puzzle pieces. And if you, whatever you take away from today, forget everything else, but please, these four steps of discipleship, I think, are the most essential in the way we deal with young people across Europe. So even with MissionNet and others, we've just collaborated on a European level, saying we need to bring discipleship back onto our agendas of churches and mission agencies. So no longer program, but process-oriented. That's so, so important. So we say, okay, what can we do to win people? How do we build foundations? And Willow Creek did a big study on that, and they realized that the people, the Christians, do not grow from level 2 to 3, if I may call that, you know, that process, if they're not engaged in any ministry. Right? So they will not grow in their faith, will become multiplicators if we don't have things for them to grow into. So what we do today, you know, fostering that among Europe to have youth mission outreaches, you know, and even I had to get converted to that again, doing that many years in India and so on. I thought, no, if I'm in Europe, every summer now I lead a team somewhere outside our own context, then we need to be hands-on and engage with them. And of course, in that, you know, have that mentoring part, equipping them, and then multiplying. Because only then can we see a movement starting, but when we go through all these levels and say, you know, now you go, and now you go and make others, you know, into disciples. So that's very, very powerful. And the last 10 things I want to share with you is how to empower young people. There's an article on that, and I thought it was fantastic. So I try to look at these 10 things and see how can I integrate them into my mission ministry. What is it out there that I connect with the young generation? There are 10 slides, so you would have to take 10 pictures. So build instant credibility. You know, what is the first impression when people come to your website? Do you have, you know, something on YouTube? The young person in Europe today spends 27 hours on social media. What is your mission agency doing? I know Andreas does a lot now via YouTube and creating films. You know, there should be under 6 minutes because that's the attention span of a young person today. But, you know, what do you do? How do you engage with that young generation? And then the second one is tell them why should they care? And what is it that breaks your heart to that, you know, that you pass on that passion to them? And share your personal passion that you win their trust. Then the next thing we found is to give them a villain. You know, someone they want to fight for or fight against. You know, this is why social justice issues have become so important among the young generation. Paint the bigger picture. Give them something which is impossible. Let them save the world. That would get realistic through the years. But you are not the one who should, you know, crush their dreams. You should be the one, you know, going with them on a journey and saying, I will be your dream coach. So lots of mission agencies now have really decided we're going to do something on vocational coaching. So, you know, when they come back from their ministries, from the one-year gap year, you know, in Africa or whatever, they're going to say, I will be your vocational coach for the next 2 years, committed to your experience. I don't want you to go back to the ordinary, you know. If you want to save the world, cause a change, you need to journey with them. So even we have started to have dream coaches at our conference saying, you know, what is the dream God has given you? What is the gifting? Go with it. Challenge them so much that they think it's too big, they can't do it, and then they go for it, which is really fascinating. Let them define their own why, you know. And in our, you know, track, we always said about, you know, it's this generation does not want to have a navigation system. Until they're 15, you can tell them right, left, wrong, whatever. But if they start to get older, above 15 years of age, you are only there to paint them a roadmap. You know, say, this is the big aim. And you say, I'm going to help you get there, but you need to see where and how and why. Why it matters. That's, again, going back to, you know, can God use me? Why does it matter that I'm part of God's kingdom making a change? The next one, promote a common purpose. You know, saying it is a collective goal. We are in this together. That's even why our slogan was changed, transforming our world. It's not my world. It's ours. It's us doing it together. We are a team. We belong to a broader community and have a shared purpose. Next one is be ultra transparent with the way you use your resources. You know, on your Facebook page, on your web page, that people can ask you all these questions. You know, how do you deal with it? And how do you deal with your failures? Show them progress. Show them any progress. They want to be part of a journey. They want to not just look at the end result, but they want to be part of the journey. So even when we say we collect money for a certain cause, we show them constantly, you know, your gifting has made that difference and we are on that journey together. What you have started, you know, serving in Africa among the poor, this project continues, and that's why they're committed to give you another donation for that. Or even come back to serve. So we have lots of people now today in Europe who go back to the places they have ministered to. Maybe they were just there for a year, but then next year they go back there just for the holidays for 3 weeks or so. And inspire them. They're interested in what are the goals you have, and they want to know how they can be part of that. So we encourage even now, you know, lots of mission agencies to, you know, just simple goals which you can, you know, show to the young generation. So these are the three things we do, and this is how you can be part of that. Make it very simple for them, but they want to know, how can I make a difference? So help them to discover their potentials. If you look at, just as an exhibit, or, you know, what a mission agency, just at recruiting, you will probably be on the false track for this young generation. They want to see how much are you engaged with them. How much do you care about them? How much are you interested that they are in the right spot, not just serving any spot in your organization? How much are you kingdom-minded that you say, you don't fit my organization, but I think you should go there? You know, have that spirit. Connect them with their dreams. Give them platforms where they can show. Give them space where they can fail. That's so important for the young generation. And offer, of course, teamwork and so on. So even, you know, when I travel a lot through Europe, if I can during the weekends, I always take a young person with me. I don't want to talk about mentoring. I want to role model that. So what is that you can do, you know, so in your mission work that people can be trained with you, alongside you? George Verwer is 76 now. From the age of 21, he has a young man every year, his gopher, who is trained by him for 1 year. Now today he just has these reunions of 55 plus people who he invested into. They have become some of the top leaders in the world today. So what is it, the everlasting legacy we're going to leave in the young generation? Thank you very much for your attention.